This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Als Gründerinnen und Gründer willst du vor allem eins, schnell vorankommen. Egal ob beim Product Market Fit, deinem nächsten Schritt oder deinem ersten großen Enterprise Deal. Doch mit KI, die Entwicklung immer schneller macht, steigen auch die Anforderungen an Sicherheit. Und das früher als je zuvor. Wer Themen wie Security und Compliance richtig angeht, ermöglicht Wachstum. Wer zu lange wartet, bremst es aus. Deshalb setzen viele Startups früh auf Wanta und wachsen sicher weiter. Wanta macht es einfach mit tiefen Integrationen, starker Automatisierung und kontinuierlichem Monitoring, das mithält. Und wenn es ans Audit geht, seien Wochen bereit, nicht erst in Monaten. Jetzt starten auf wanta.com. Als Gründerinnen und Gründer willst du vor allem eins, schnell vorankommen. Egal ob beim Product Market Fit, deinem nächsten Schritt oder deinem ersten großen Enterprise Deal. Doch mit KI, die Entwicklung immer schneller macht, steigen auch die Anforderungen an Sicherheit. Und das früher als je zuvor. Wer Themen wie Security und Compliance richtig angeht, ermöglicht Wachstum. Wer zu lange wartet, bremst es aus. Deshalb setzen viele Startups früh auf Wanta und wachsen sicher weiter. Wanta macht es einfach mit tiefen Integrationen, starker Automatisierung und kontinuierlichem Monitoring, das mithält. Und wenn es ans Audit geht, seien Wochen bereit, nicht erst in Monaten. Jetzt starten auf wanta.com.
Welcome to the briefing room with me, David Aronovich. Let's imagine we're in a large room, in a converted warehouse perhaps, crammed with reference books, charts, maps, and a small army of leading experts who in the next half hour can tell us everything we might want to know about the burning issues of the day. Or this week, the vaping issue of the day. Are e-cigarettes dangerous? And if you enjoy this podcast, you might enjoy some of our other episodes, for example, the one on the opioid epidemic in the US. You can find it on BBC Sounds. The President is worried.
We have a problem in our country. It's a new problem. It's a problem that nobody really thought about too much a few years ago, and it's called vaping, especially vaping as it pertains to innocent children. We can't allow people to get sick, and we can't have our youth be so affected.
After news emerged in America of a growing number of deaths linked to the use of electronic cigarettes, the federal government and many US states have made moves to ban the sale of the products. Other countries, such as India, are following suit. But some experts believe that vaping is relatively harmless, and besides, it has a useful role to play in helping people to give up smoking. So what I want to find out this week is, why have e-cigarettes become so popular? And what are the risks of using them? To vape or not to vape? Step inside the briefing room and let's find out. I've wandered a few yards outside the BBC down Great Portland Street in London to My Cigara, which is a vaping speciality shop, and I've never been in one before. And I'm with Vish and Rory. And guys, what I want to know is, let's imagine I'm my 1993 self and I'm on 20 silk cut a day and I want to give up. What are you going to tell me?
I would always point customers in directions of the starter kits for those that want to stop smoking, because they're designed to simulate smoking more with what we call mouth-to-lung devices, and they are much higher nicotine.
Right, so what am I actually doing? What is a vape at all?
So a vaping device uses a heating element surrounded by cotton, which vaporizes liquid, which we then inhale.
Well, you've got about a 4-inch long, rather elegant red cylinder. Seems to be composed of two bits. One's got a switch on it, the other bit's got a kind of little transparent windows in it. What am I looking at?
So this is one of our basic starter kits. Here's your battery with your power switch, and this is your tank. You would fill the tank up with your juice, and it would heat the juice up, and when you take a drag, it vaporizes.
So it's really simple. Electricity, power here, juice there, heats up, in it goes into your mouth, and you just draw it in.
Yeah.
Right. And do you make any recommendation about what level of nicotine people should use and how often they should use it?
Yeah. Generally, what we recommend is off the amount of cigarettes that you're smoking per day. So say, for example, if you're smoking less than 5, probably a 3 milligram would be good for you, between 5 and 10, maybe 6, 10 and 20, 12, and then over 20 cigarettes, we'd probably recommend a 20 milligram or an 18 milligram nicotine strength, being that the strongest we're allowed to sell legally due to the TPD regulations in the UK is at 20 milligram.
Due to the what regulations?
The TPD, so the Tobacco Products Directive.
Now, what are your most popular products?
In terms of liquid or in terms of device?
Actually, I have no idea. Do you sell them separately, so both?
So in terms of liquid, we're opening a whole new kettle of fish here, so...
You've got one up there called Nasty Juice.
Yeah, there are quite some crazy names out there to stand out.
Can you tell me what some of those flavours under Nasty Juice are?
We've got blackcurrant, honeydew melon, mango, pineapple lemonade, double apple, sour pineapple, got some tobacco ones, got quite a lot.
Okay, now, let's say I'm not a smoker. Mm-hmm. I've never smoked in my life, and I come in and say, I've never smoked, but I'm thinking of taking up vaping. What would you say?
I'd probably ask you why. Generally, the response is, I just like the flavour. On occasion, I might have the odd cheeky cigarette. Then I'd probably recommend you something with zero nicotine. So you're quite literally just vaping the flavour at that point, and it's more for the action.
So you would be inclined, if somebody was a non-smoker, to warn them off the nicotine as such?
Yeah, because of course nicotine is an addictive substance, and personally I don't think that it's a good idea to get yourself addicted to something when you can just get the same sort of experience without it.
Vishal Oza and Rory McDade there in the Cigara vape shop. Aids to help people give up smoking, like nicotine chewing gum, which I use to help me quit, or patches, have been around for decades. But vaping, e-cigarettes, is a more recent development. It started in China, but it's in America that the industry has been most in the news. So how did vaping take off in the States? I was joined earlier in the briefing room by Hannah Kuchler, the US pharma and biotech correspondent at the Financial Times, who is in New York. Hannah Kuchler, can you tell me a bit about how the e-cigarette industry has evolved in the US?
Yeah, so e-cigarettes has become a category sort of very fast in the last couple of years. It's now estimated to be about $4.5 billion in the US. 10 million Americans have said that they vape. This is still small compared to the entire tobacco industry, which is over $100 billion, but it's really growing fast. While tobacco is declining sort of about 7% year on year in the last 3 months, e-cigarettes are rising 50% year on year.
Who are the main consumers, as far as we can tell?
It's predominantly young people. FDA data, so FDA is the Food and Drug Administration, the regulator here in the US, has shown about a quarter of high school students say that they've vaped in the past month. And we have to admit that maybe teenagers don't always admit these things, so that may actually be even higher. And, you know, when you get beyond high school, there's a fair bit of representation in 18 to 34-year-olds, and then it starts to drop off pretty dramatically and everyone is smoking, is sticking to their cigarettes.
Forgive my ignorance. High school is what, 11 to 17, 18?
Oh, it's high school is 14 to 18.
14 to 18. That's quite a significant number. How does this relate to smoking habits amongst young people?
All the anecdotal evidence is that young people find smoking kind of disgusting. And so vaping has really been able to take advantage of that because it doesn't have the same kind of smell. They have all these fun flavours like mango and cucumber. And you can also, you know, do it anywhere. Obviously, the smoking bans that came in a decade ago have really restricted where you can smoke. But people are vaping in the back of glass. They're vaping in the car, you know, in the car with their parents without their parents really realising what was going on.
I was told earlier today that British vapes are limited to 20 milligrams of nicotine. Is that roughly the same in the United States?
No, it's actually completely different in the US, where they're limited to up to 59, so almost three times as much nicotine, which really kind of makes them a completely different product in a way.
How have the vaping companies approached the marketing? Because I imagine that this perception makes a difference.
Originally, the kind of real pioneer here and who still has the vast majority of the market is called Juul. And they styled themselves, you know, they're not a big tobacco company. They styled themselves an alternative. They're based in San Francisco. They were founded by these design students at Stanford. And, you know, they've kind of attracted tech employees saying their mission was to tackle the biggest public health crisis. You know, cigarettes still are the number one unnecessary cause of death in the US. And then the way they sell themselves to younger people is by, you know, having these colourful cartridges, these different flavours, and maybe not Juul itself, but lots of the companies that make these kind of counterfeit cartridges for the devices, you know, make them look like soft drinks or sweets or things that can easily be disguised.
That's not the same message as a smoking cessation message. That's a message that says these things are fun in themselves.
Yes, definitely. And I think that that is where the regulators in the US have got really concerned. They recently criticised Juul for sort of selling itself as much safer than smoking. They have been concerned about flavours in particular. And so we've seen Juul take a lot of its flavours off the market. And now it mainly just has menthol or mint, as well as the kind of regular flavour. And now that President Trump is talking about whether they should take menthol off the market as well.
Has Big Tobacco now finally got in on the act?
Yes, definitely. They moved pretty fast because they could see this was going to be a real threat or a real opportunity, depending on whether they took advantage of it. So Altria took a stake in Juul, a 35%.
Altria, a big tobacco company, are they?
Yeah, and they took a stake in Juul for $12.8 billion, which is a sort of gigantic deal for a venture-backed company, a 35% stake. And now Philip Morris are trying to merge with Altria. And so that would give them a big part of the e-cigarette industry. And then many companies are also developed their own sort of homegrown vaping brands. BAT required Reynolds has a brand called Vype, and Imperial Tobacco started investing in vaping technology sort of around 2012.
That's an enormous amount of money. You really surprised me there. I was expecting a much lower figure for that. So obviously they see a substantial future for them in this business. Now, can you explain to British listeners what's been happening in the United States recently with regard to the attitude of state authorities and governmental authorities to vaping?
So I think because of this fear that young people are getting into vaping when they wouldn't have been smoking, they're really trying to restrict the sale. And more recently, in the last few weeks, there's been sort of a resurgence of this panic because we've seen this kind of mysterious illness related to vaping emerge and actually start killing people. And so there's been a handful of people killed in the US by this lung disease, and there are hundreds of people infected, and that's really sort of accelerated the decision-making in this area. President Trump held a press conference last week, and he really said, we need to do something about this. And the main suggestion is banning the flavors from the market. While there's been this big debate at the federal level, some states and cities are taking action into their own hands. And so we have seen the city of San Francisco, New York State, and the state of Michigan all banning the sale of vaping devices and cartridges.
Hannah Kuchler. To get an idea of how the scientific and health arguments have developed in America, how we got to the point of presidential intervention, I spoke to Tom Novotny, Professor of Epidemiology and Biostatistics at San Diego State University and a former US government public health official. Tom Novotny, we've heard about how the e-cigarette industry evolved. Have these products been subject to the same study as other drugs which have been used to help people quit smoking? I'm thinking of nicotine patches and so on.
No, they haven't. And that's really been the seat of the controversy in the United States and elsewhere. The FDA has regulatory authority, the Food and Drug Administration. And in this case, these were marketed as a substitute product, but also with the intention of smoking cessation assistance. But they have not gone through the regulatory approval process that gum patches, inhalants have done in the past that have been first used as prescription drugs and then later over the counter.
Now, why was that?
Well, first of all, there had to be authority for the Food and Drug Administration to be able to do these kind of regulatory oversight. The law that enabled the FDA to do that didn't get passed until 2010. And it took several years for a new agency to be set up, the Center for Tobacco Products.
So there was literally a regulatory gap,
right,
between them being introduced and anybody having the authority to try and to try and regulate them. What about scientific research into their impact? Has that lagged behind in the same way?
Yeah, although there's more and more of that. And there's research on several different fronts. One, the efficacy of them as a smoking cessation device. And I'm sure you're aware of the published research here, a clinical trial that showed that they were effective about 18% of the time versus, say, around 10% of the time for other standard products.
So they were nearly double, that study showed they were nearly doubly as effective.
Yeah, but that's the only one so far. And it was also supported by intensive behavioral support and other kinds of things that we consider standard practice in smoking cessation. What we've also seen is that 2/3 of users are actually dual users of cigarettes and vaping devices.
What about any scientific studies into any conceivable harmful effects from the process of vaping?
Right. We've been seeing increasing number of those studies. And what we've seen is there's everything from DNA alterations caused by the nicotine to changes in the cells that are reminiscent of pulmonary damage. And now what we're seeing are reports of pulmonary injury that are now making quite a bit of news in the United States. What we don't know is what are in these things completely. I mean, again, they're not regulated, so there isn't a good sort of assessment of the chemical composition. We know there are flavorings, and those flavorings are approved by the FDA for consumption, but not necessarily for combustion. So there's
a lot of complexity. You're allowed to eat them, but whether or not you should smoke them, or rather take them into your lungs, is a completely different matter.
Right.
Tom, when you buy vapes in America, do they have to list all the ingredients by law?
No, there's no regulation on that at this time. And, you know, they list, I think, the strength of how much nicotine is in there and how strong it is. The other thing is that people are adulterating these things, that there's, you know, bootleg operations, and so it's difficult to control this unless the regulatory process is well implemented.
What's the legal age of vaping in the States?
Well, it depends on the state. Many states have set the legal age for purchasing of any tobacco product at 21. Some are at 18, some are, I think, even less than that.
Tom, where do public health professionals in the state stand on how vaping should be treated by regulators and legislators?
Well, there's a split. I think there's agreement that they should be regulated. And that means, you know, assured of their safety and what's in them and how they're sold and how they're labeled, etc. What I think is split is the value of them as harm reduction rather than as a sustained nicotine addiction problem. And that's the real split in the United States, at least.
Now, this is an interesting divergence. And again, you say, if I was the minister, I'd say, but look, I've got to make a decision here between the harm that I know cigarettes cause and the harm that you think might be caused by the thing that will take people off cigarettes.
Well, the other issue I think that's important to recognize is that these are addictive products. Nicotine is one of the most addictive substances. It's marketed legally everywhere, practically. And it is not benign. I mean, in the case of the United States, what we're experiencing there is a pediatric epidemic of vaping that is undoubtedly going to show up as harmful. Middle school and high school kids are using these products more commonly than they are smoking. And it's reversed some of the success we've had. And this is one of the biggest concerns we've had, is we've found this to be the case, that this is now marketed to kids, it's used by kids, and it is having an effect on many kids neurologically and behaviorally.
Okay, so what can we actually say scientifically the effects on them behaviorally or neurologically might be?
Well, we have lots of evidence to show that it has direct effects on the developing brain, and the brain continues to develop until about age 25.
And this is just nicotine itself?
Nicotine itself. Nicotine also has impacts on DNA. We know that it has some genetic impacts as well. And it is cardiovascularly active. It can increase the blood pressure. It can lead to increased risk for cardiovascular disease as well.
Tom Novotny. Here in Britain, until now, there hasn't been such a high level of public concern as in the US. But should there be? If I were the Health Secretary, how should I be thinking about vaping? I'm joined in the briefing room by Linda Bald, Professor of Public Health at the University of Edinburgh, and Leon Shahab, Associate Professor in Health Psychology at University College London. Linda Bald, what does the current state of research in the UK tell us about the health risks from vaping?
So we have dozens of studies now done over several years. The products have been on the market for almost a decade. What we do know is that they are not safe, they're not risk-free, but they are significantly less harmful than tobacco use. They have far fewer toxicants and carcinogens. And for people who are trying to switch to away from tobacco to quit smoking, they're a good option. They're not products for never smokers or teenagers, but for smoking cessation, the trials say they work and they're less risky than smoking.
How do we know just how effective e-cigarettes have been as a way of getting people to stop smoking? What's the actual hard evidence?
We have several good quality large trials, including one published just last year in the New England Journal of Medicine, that shows that people who are randomized to use an e-cigarette, often with counseling, are more likely to quit smoking than if they're randomized to products that are medicines like nicotine replacement therapy plus counseling. So that gives us really good quality evidence. They're the most popular way to stop smoking, used in over one third of quit attempts. And in population level studies, we see that they make a contribution to more people quitting.
Leon, in the US, they take a different view and they believe that there are significant risks from respiratory illnesses. Are they looking at the same products as we are when they come to that conclusion?
I would say they are not. Just from a very basic epidemiological viewpoint, you have to consider there are about 40 million users of e-cigarettes currently worldwide. In the UK alone, there are about 3 million users. And they've been used for over a decade, and there has not been any kind of alert with regards to respiratory diseases of the kind seen in the US. And so what it means is likely is that it has nothing to do with the behavior of vaping, but rather with the content of what is being vaped in the US. And they're quite clustered. In particular, the people who have been diagnosed with this so-called vaping lung disease appear to have been using products that have been adulterated, and they include things such as marijuana, THC, and CBD, which probably also use particular solvents that make them more harmful. So none of the products that we use currently in the UK have been linked to any of these diseases, as far as I can see.
Leon, how do we know that all the problems in the US are actually caused by adulteration rather than by just the normal products?
So we can't be entirely certain. However, what has been reported in the media for those cases where this has been disclosed is that people who have developed these diseases, this vaping lung disease, usually also used marijuana constituents in their vapes. The problem with marijuana constituents such as THC and CBD is that they're not easily water soluble. So you have to use an oil-based dissolvent, essentially. And inhaling oil, when it is warmed up, via an e-cigarette into your lungs is very harmful. We know this, for instance, from decades of research looking at the exposure to indoor fumes from open fires, etc., which have been linked to respiratory diseases. And that is the most likely explanation for this spate of diseases.
Linda Bold, is that a perception shared here in the UK?
No, so we are very different in our approach to nicotine from the US. We have official guidance on this, NICE Tobacco Harm Reduction Guidance. It's actually a group that I chaired. And historically, we've provided nicotine to smokers who are trying to quit in other forms for many years and made it available on the NHS. We actually also provide pregnant women with nicotine replacement therapy that's very rare in the US. So nicotine is a stimulant. It is addictive, but it doesn't cause cancer. It's not a direct cause of heart disease. It's the other things in tobacco and smoking that cause those conditions. I think what the Americans are concerned about is the addictive property of nicotine, but they also extrapolate lots of risks that we just don't really see in the data.
So are we saying that it really just doesn't matter if people ingest nicotine?
Well, there's different views about addiction. I think my view, again, having worked on the NICE guidance, is that if you look at all the drugs that people use in society, it's definitely one of the least harmful health-wise. You know, we don't want loads of young people buying nicotine products, wasting their money on it, etc. But I really think the risks have been overplayed. And I think nicotine has been demonized partially because mostly in the past, it was delivered through smoking, and smoking was harmful. And we, in our public health messaging, we just confused the two. And that's actually the case in the US as well as the UK, because when you ask the public in the UK, do they think nicotine is harmful? Do they think nicotine causes cancer? Many, many people believe that is the case, but that's not true.
Now, we heard earlier that the phrase pediatric epidemic when applied to vaping in the States. In other words, it's actually being taken up by young people. From what both of you have said, I have no need to be worried if I'm the health secretary by it being taken up by young people, except insofar as they're wasting their money on it. Linda?
that is the main thing. But what I would say is the evidence from the US of these recent cases suggests that young people are using products probably for the nicotine, maybe for other reasons as well. And then they're using products that are being contaminated. They're illicit. There are constituents in them that are harmful. And that is worrying. So it's not the nicotine that we're worried about. It's the other things. But the other phenomenon that is happening in the States, and Leon can speak to this as well, is that they have seen a genuine, significant and striking rise in the use of e-cigarettes in young people. In the latest 2019 survey, 28% of teenagers had vaped in the last month. And those rates are higher currently than they are in the UK.
Okay, I still face a degree of a public health message problem if I'm the health secretary. I definitely want smokers to go on to vaping if that's a good way of them coming off smoking. All the figures tell me that. But I'm still not totally clear whether I should therefore say vaping, great, or whether I should be saying vaping, good for smokers, but if you're not a smoker, probably best not. Linda?
Actually, I think that is what UK policy says. We have worked very hard to promote these products to smokers, and we're seeing more and more evidence that they work. They're hugely popular. They're used in over a third of quit attempts. But at the same time, we've introduced regulation, a lot of it originally from European law, to protect young people. So I don't think anybody is saying young people who've never smoked should vape or adults who've never smoked should vape. Nobody's saying that. But I think what we've tried to do in our policy context is strike the balance between promoting the products to smokers and making them available while having regulations that protect young people. And we can talk about what those regulations are, but part of the international confusion is that people don't understand what we've done in the UK to try and protect youth. They just think that we like these products and we think they're wonderful and, you know, we're promoting them irresponsibly, and that's not the case.
So very roughly, what have we done to protect youth? And then after that, is this strategy working?
As part of the Tobacco Protocol Directive, there have been advertising restrictions put in place when it comes to e-cigarette, which isn't seen in the US. So there was one TV advert for e-cigarettes, I think in 2015, which was quite quickly flagged up and basically banned from TV. Whereas in the US, there's been proliferation of advertising, which is clearly targeting adolescents. And in the UK, this is not really possible. This is one of the steps we've taken. I think another key thing, it just has something more to do with the general context, is that in the UK, the discourse has always been about harm reduction and smoking cessation. Whereas in the US, the discourse has been more focused around it being a lifestyle and consumer product. And there was the vested interests as well.
Leon, you're also involved in advising other countries, aren't you?
Well, I've been invited, for instance, to present results from our studies looking at the harmful effects of e-cigarettes in India, for instance, which has very recently, in fact, yesterday, as far as I know, banned the use of e-cigarettes, which I find rather puzzling, given that there are about 100, 120 million smokers there, in addition to another 150 million users of smokeless products, which are completely legally available. And one of the products that may help people get off the most dangerous of products, which is the cigarette, is now not available anymore.
Is this partially because they're using a deep version of the precautionary principle, which is we don't really know fully what this stuff will lead to? We may get scientific studies in the longer term. If we had known when we started with cigarettes what we know now, we wouldn't have allowed it. Why not be precautionary with vaping?
Well, indeed, this is, I think, a misapplied precautionary principle insofar as the alternative is the use of cigarettes. And it is very, very difficult. Couldn't stress it enough. It's very difficult to produce a product that is more dangerous than a cigarette, because essentially it's designed to make you addicted. And if you use it as directed, you die as a result of it.
Linda, finally, as the health secretary, what I want to know is whether my current strategy, the one that you've outlined essentially and the one that you seem to support, is working. I take it your advice to me is that it is.
So my advice to you is to hold firm and try and weather the storm of the international criticism that the UK is facing because of our support for tobacco harm reduction. I think we're at risk. I think even those of us who've fought very hard for an evidence-based approach feel the pressure from our colleagues and governments in other countries. Like Leon, I've advised governments in other countries. It's very different. So I guess my advice to the Secretary of State would be to continue with the UK's policy. And the reason I would advocate that is that we have some of the best data in the world that shows us what's happening in the marketplace and with people. Our smoking rates are declining quickly at a very encouraging rate. We have the lowest rates of youth smoking we've ever seen. So we're going in the right direction. We're moving towards a smoke-free society.
Linda Bald there, and Leon Shahab. Well, we have an argument here, but if you set the possible risk from vaping against the certain health benefits of helping people quit smoking, then in the British context, allowing vaping to continue seems to me the best policy for the time being. My thanks to Hannah Kuchler, Linda Bald, Leon Shahab and Tom Novotny. We'll be back at the same time next week. You've been listening to The Briefing Room with me, David Aronovich. The producers were Kirstine Knight, Neil Koenig and Serena Tarling. The studio manager was Tom Brignall. And the production coordinator was Iki Ekpatola. And if you'd like to listen to more episodes, you can catch up by going to BBC Sounds.
Hello, it's Ray Winstone. I'm here to tell you about my podcast on BBC Radio 4, History's Toughest Heroes. I've got stories about the pioneers, the rebels, the outcasts who define tough.
And that was the first time that anybody ever ran a car up that fast with no tires on. It almost feels like your eyeballs are going to come out of your head.
Tough enough for you? Subscribe to History's Toughest Heroes wherever you get your podcast.